Comic Book Legion podcast, where I am here, and apparently people really like us when you and me fight, Clay.
I haven't looked at it yet. Did we get a lot of hits for last
time? We hit a record. We hit 3.7 million downloads. Like, we're bigger than Joe Rogan.
No, we did not.
No.
Okay, I was like, for a split second, I was like, no freaking way. But,
yeah.
I mean, the
response was good.
Oh, yeah.
The response has been very good. Just for some reason, I usually get most of my responses, like, in DMs. I think since people just know that I just don't post that much anymore.
Yeah.
That I have a lot of just, like, private conversations. And it's funny, just because, I mean, as I mentioned on one of our Slack pages, that even, like, my buddies from Nation of Nerds, like, you know, they've even been like, man, Clay just seems to just hate Bendis to hate it. It's like it's his gimmick.
It's not a gimmick.
I just didn't want to, like, reveal who it was, even though I think I told Clay after. But I haven't told everybody else.
Oh,
but,
man.
Yeah, no, so this was a huge week. I mean, I think in regards to, like, in weeks where sometimes Clay and I, we can only think of, like, three books that we want to read, so that's why we only review sometimes very few books. This book was, I think, overwhelmingly huge, maybe because of Christmas, and they're just planning, you know, Christmas. You got Hanukkah coming up soon. Well, you know what? And happy holidays to everybody.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if that's what it was, but there was, like, 20-plus titles this week.
Oh, there was 29 titles, and next week, I think we're taking the week off because there's only 4 titles, and they're all trades.
Yeah, you see? So I think they just jammed the 2 weeks into it. And there were so many Black Label books. Not only Black Label books, which are the equivalent of, you know, three comics in one, but we also have the ending of really, really big stories in terms of, like, the DCU, which is we have the ending of Tom King's Batman run, which we're going to talk about. I mean, Doomsday Clock has finally arrived. It is the end.
Yes.
And we can't wait to talk about that book. We also have some beginnings with Tom Taylor's Suicide Squad run. So let's just go ahead and dive in and let's jump into Batman. I mean, Rebirth, this is like one of those titles that I guess it's very bittersweet because this was a book that survived all creative changes, like creative team changes, minus the art. But this was Tom King from beginning to end, minus that little, you know, Steve Orlando, Monster Man, and yes, Joshua Williamson helped out with the button. But this has been primarily all Tom King's run. And this is going to be, it's going to be divisive. When you ask people, what do they think about Tom King's 85-issue Batman run? And I think Tom King likes that. I don't think he wants to have it be where everybody just loves it, because then normally there's nothing to talk about. I think you kind of like to have that, you know, be on that line where people either love it, they hate it, but there's not that much in between.
Mm-hmm.
Now, overall, like, briefly, overall, what are your thoughts in regards to Tom King's Batman run, knowing that you started, like, at issue 50?
So, overall, if I had to grade on a scale of 1 to 10, just like any regular review, but for the entire run, I would give this run, I believe, a 7.5 out of 10.
Okay, like C+.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I will tell you, the main reason for that is probably the nightmares and the beginning of City of Bane. So, out of everything that we've gotten in the 85 issues, you know, I went back and I binged 1 through 49 in a week's span. I read all 49 issues in 1 week. It was awesome because I was able to do it pretty quickly digitally. And, you know, I really enjoyed those stories. I really liked the way, you know, Tom King brought up Bane. Of course, you know, he, you know, did the little switcheroo with Thomas at the end, which, you know, kind of hurt me a little bit because I was wanting a Bane-centered story. And, you know, Thomas Wayne kind of hijacked that, and it seems like Tom King wanted that, you know, from the very beginning, or what people say is from the very beginning. But, you know, I would give it a 7.5. You know, it was it. I think this book in particular, 85, stuck the landing, but because of the frustration that we had getting here, I couldn't give it any higher.
No, I hear you. I think overall, Tom King's run, I would give it like a B, because to me, it's more the first. I mean, I love the issues right after Batman 50, with like the 12 Angry Men.
Yeah,
when it was kind of like the Mr. Freeze run. I don't remember the name of the arc. So for me, yeah, I was definitely, his run was like an A, the first half, and then that's when you started getting some really weird time jumps and, you know, like pauses in the story, and that's kind of like where, again, I don't know if it's because 15 issues was taken away from this run, and maybe that sacrifice where things just felt really, really choppy and just editing felt weird. But yeah, the second half kind of faltered a bit. So yeah, I would give it like a B. Like I'll always remember the story because it was great for you know the times that I was reading it. You know, and I gotta give him props. I mean, it's gotta be tough doing this every 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know,
I think that not too many people take that into account. That sure, Snyder's run was amazing. Snyder's run was also once a month. I mean, like yeah. He had time to craft the story for those 4 or 5 years. Doing it every, you know, I can see how it's being, how it was tough work. But again, I figured knowing the work that we've seen of Tom King, a lot of these choices, I feel like even if it was monthly, it could have still had these kind of twists and turns that were a little questionable. But yeah, I agree. I think that this issue, for the most part, it did stick the landing. And this was a confrontation where we're back at it again with Thomas screaming at Bruce, stay down. And it looks like here, there was a nice little twist where, you know, we saw Selina in the last issue where she looked completely robotic, but it looks like, no, that was not the case, because one of the greatest places was, it was a nice little nod on how the ventriloquist couldn't really take hold of Selina. Why? Because of, she had a small piece of, like, Scarface, and that's one thing that, you know, ventriloquists can't really control. I was like, all right, that was a really cool little nod here.
And it was something that Catwoman hinted at on the Flashpoint Earth when they when you saw her fighting with Batman. Mm-hmm. She did state, oh, the one person that ventriloquist cannot control is Scarface. So he did call back to the last issue. I knew that was going to be some sort of, you know, big hint as far as like what would come out of 85. I just didn't know it to what capacity. I really enjoyed that part. It was really clever in my mind. Really, really enjoy the art on this, by the way. I think Mikhail Yanin was a really good bookend to put at the end of King's run. Really been enjoying his Batman ever since Finch got off at the very beginning of the Rebirth run. So, really solid choice to put Mikhail Yanin on this book.
No, absolutely. I figured it kind of, well, no, it started with David Finch, but it felt like a lot of the big meaty parts of, it felt like whenever Tom King was really trying to say the main part of the story, it was always Mikhail.
Mm-hmm.
And then whenever you've had, you know, like the B stories that kind of round everything out is when you had the David Finches, the Gerards, the Tony Daniels. They did more. Lee Weeks. Oh, and George Fornes, yeah. Like at the end. Man, what a creative team. Tom King was blessed, man.
Yeah, he was.
With like some incredible artists. But yeah, so here you're kind of getting a little bit of like a back and forth in regards to confrontations with Thomas. And then, which I thought was a nice touch. I mean, we always know that Tom King throughout his run has been really enjoying bringing down Campbell down, like with a lot of these football analogies. And this was more, I kind of liked the analogy here because you got Bruce just walking up to a bar and lo and behold, I don't know if anybody knows his name or not, But the man that he is sitting next to and kind of talking about that there's always hope, even though Campbell sucks and he's always, you know, making mistakes, but here he is, he's getting that chance again. And in reality, the whole point of the story was that no matter how many times Campbell was getting knocked down, you know, he was able to get back up. And I really enjoyed that. But it, what was funny is that the person that he was actually speaking to was a man named Chuck Brown. And yes, that is also known as Kite Man. And I loved hearing, you know, seeing like that conversation.
Well,
I wonder if Bruce knows that it's Kite Man.
He does, because I think the big thing that King actually answered this on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, somebody asked him, like, hey, for the perfect ending, what do you think you would do for the perfect ending of your book? And it sounded like a really silly answer, but he said that he wanted to, you know, have Batman and Kite Man sit down and drink a beer. And it's not necessarily nice. Okay. Batman and Kite Man. It is their, you know, secret identities or whatever. But it plays really well with the story. And I will say it is one of the only nitpicks that I have about this book. Now, you know me. I don't like things being too meta. I don't like it when people point out, I don't like it when the writers point out, you know, really specific things about the characters that are just like, oh, well, that's really on the nose. You know, the whole story of Campbell, this football player, is basically what Bruce has gone through from the beginning of Tom King's run all the way until now. And for me, it felt really on the nose. So I was like, you know, that kind of takes me out of it. But I was able to kind of just push that away because of the rest of the story that we got. Now,
well, the reason why I kind of like it in this case, because I feel like, yes, it is on the nose because it is pretty much telling you Bruce's story. But for me, it kind of feels like Kite Man will be able to relate with a bum like Campbell. Because, yeah, Bruce and Batman, this guy, everyone sees him, even though he's just a man. I mean, he's a mythical figure. Like, this dude's pretty much like a god to so many people, even though he's just a dude in a cape and a cowl.
Yeah.
But for someone like Kite Man, who's just been dragged in the mud, and no one has ever respected Kite Man, but he has developed a little bit of a following because of this run, I feel like Campbell would be able to, that Kite Man would be able to relate with Campbell. And it just so happens that Kite Man relating to a scrub quarterback is literally what's happening to the stud Batman that's right next to him.
Yeah.
So that's why I liked it. I enjoyed it. But yes, it was on the nose, but I thought it was, I don't know, like, I enjoyed that moment more than what was going on with, like, Thomas. Because it felt like a really quick fight. You know?
Yeah.
The fight was really quick, and so, like, honestly, that part I didn't really care about. Like, I enjoyed seeing Gotham Girl kind of speaking normal again and just having conversations with Bruce, even though whenever Batman kept on saying, like, it's not about me, he just wanted to make sure that he was good, because I know that he feels guilty over what's happened with Gotham Girl, but it was more like, you know, she's got, like, her freedom, you know, now she was able to get her powers back. But in reality, I love that she was always bringing it back on Batman. And he keeps on saying that wasn't about me. But I love that, you know, she was one of those that were kind of, like, pushing this, you know, what about Selina? Like, you guys clearly love each other. Like, come on. Stop worrying about me and go get your girl.
And I do want to say I really like the callback to Batman's Secret Files. It was a book that was released last year in December. It had, like, 3 or 4 stories. The very first story was a Tom King story where Batman and Superman found this platinum kryptonite. And he does use that here with Gotham.
That was very
Girl.
Clever.
Platinum kryptonite, if nobody remembers, or if anybody doesn't remember, platinum kryptonite is basically the kryptonite that can give anybody the power of a Kryptonian. In that story in the Secret Files, Batman was contemplating using it on himself to be better for Gotham because of the incident with Gotham and Gotham Girl. He was going to pass Gotham to them as he retired. But, you know, that did dawn on him with the fact that, you know, they went crazy and they were kind of, you know, too powerful, and he questions whether he's good enough to have that power and all that stuff. So, you know, we thought, or I thought genuinely, that the Platinum Kryptonite would never see the light of day again. And I'm really glad that he gave it to Gotham Girl, because for now, what I assume is Gotham Girl is basically a Kryptonian now. She is no longer sick. She's no longer going to die from her powers. And which, because she is basically Kryptonian, she's probably going to live a lot longer than everybody else. So, I can assume...
And it looks like now that we have like a super in Gotham.
Yeah, we have a super in Gotham that I can assume in the future may be a part of 5G.
Quite possibly. So, yeah, we'll see. But I thought that was really clever. Now, for everything that I wasn't really a fan of with, like, the... I guess, well, in this case, it looked like it was more of a flashback with what was happening with Thomas, Bruce, and Selina in the fight in the mansion. For as much as I thought that was a little bit quick and kind of like, like anticlimactic, I really enjoyed the conversation with Bruce and his father, Hannibal Lecter style. Which was... When this all started, I actually was I was very close to dying, and the question that I have always asked was, would you be proud of me? And with those questions, he was saying to himself, he's like, yes, when you died, a little boy made a vow to, you know, just to avenge and to make sure that, you know, crime and nothing like this happens again to anybody else. But he's like, listen, I'm not a little boy anymore. I'm Batman now because I choose to be Batman. And I love that, because I know that was always a big story, like, why am I Batman? I mean, I think in every single letter that he would write to, like, Selina and stuff like that. I mean, you got that, like, in the rooftops. You got that in Batman 50. There's always been a lot of things, like, why is Bruce Batman? Does he need to be... Can he be happy and be Batman at the same time? You know, those were the questions, it seemed, that was always being asked throughout this run. And I thought that the small panels that we've got here with him talking to his father in the penitentiary, I thought that... You know, I thought that was done very, very well.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. The one thing that I needed in this book, I absolutely told this to several people, I needed Bruce to tell Thomas that he is not his child. And Thomas is not his father. Because, let's face the facts here, Thomas's son, died.
Is dead.
He is D-E-A-D dead. He died. And I absolutely love it when Bruce tells him, he says, hey, you need to understand, and I need you to really understand this, and he freaking just socks him right in the face and says, you are not my father. And that is something that I absolutely wanted in this story, just so that way we could sever ties right then and there. And, you know, the point that you said, he has like this Hannibal Lecter type mask, so we see that he is captured, he is being incarcerated, but we actually see a Bane, a recovering Bane. With
Thomas's story is nowhere near done after that haymaker.
I was gonna say no. So it shows that he wants to break the bat, and he looks like he breaks Thomas Wayne's back, but if you noticed, you don't see any type of funeral or anything else. We will see Thomas Wayne again. Like, we will for sure see this character. I think DC knows that Thomas Wayne at some point was a really popular character, and people who love this story really love the Flashpoint Batman, and they don't want to get rid of their popular characters. So this is just some, you know, a new rogue that Batman has in Gotham, basically.
Yeah, but treat him, especially with the presence that he's had, treat him like a hush. Like, that we don't see you for a while.
Yeah, don't treat him like Batman Who Laughs. Treat him like Hush.
Yeah. So that in between that, lo and behold, yes, I mean, the overarching story of all this was always about Batman and Selina. And with Batman and Catwoman, they've had their moments where, yes, once they finally concluded kind of like their story, they were all about, like, hey, you know, hey, let's get married. Oh, but, you know, they end up in the bed. They're like, oh, we forgot about the judge. And I love that Selina, she's like, no, we work outside the law. Like, we don't need, like, a judge to tell us if we're married. I mean, we're going to be, one thing that we know is that we're in love and we'll always be in love. And we're going to do this forever. Now, that way, that can work both ways. One way for those that are like the shippers that really wanted them married are going to be like, oh, but they never got married. Blah, 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 blah. And then the other one is like, well, that kind of leaves like an opening where, you know, things can go bad later on. And they're not technically, we're not going to have like a divorce issue.
See, that's what I was going to ask you. Because when I first read this, I had the conversation with my other co-host on Batman News Weekly, Juice, that I genuinely think people were going to be upset about this. Because you have those diehards that were so pumped for the legitimate wedding that, you know, Tom King made an effort to have a wedding issue that they got all dressed up and they were going to say their vows and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, he was hinting at the promise of them getting married. And so that's why people were sticking with it. Like, oh, yeah, you know, we're finally going to get that Batcat moment. And you do get it, but they're not legally married. Now, of course,
well, I mean, they're doing it in their own terms, and I'm okay with that. I mean, I think, like, the other thing, I mean, I think that just gets to show you that most of all that outrage just happened because it was on the news and because it was spoiled on Time Weekly, on the Time, or the Journal, Time Weekly, or one of those magazines. And it was just, it was spoiled like a week before the book actually came out.
Yeah.
I think people were just, you know, again, it's social media. I mean, people are mad about everything. People copy what other people post and they put it as theirs as if they're creative. It's just about, you know, the attention. I mean, no one, if people really cared about that, then they would be upset about this. But at the end of the day, it was just about them being together. And I thought it was well. It was a nice story. Does it cover everything? For the most part, yes. Did it do it quickly, kind of rushed? Yes, but at least it got it done.
Yeah, for sure.
And it got it done in a way that you can either wish there was more, but at least you have closure.
Yeah.
So it provided you closure, and I think that, you know, again, the Batcat story, it's only beginning. Because now they're getting their own title. So, I, you know, if you love that duo, you're going to get a lot more of it. And it's probably going to be just as steamy as those beach issues were. Who knows? Maybe. And, well, it's probably going to be even more because I forgot. I mean, we got Phantasm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I forgot about that. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. Again, like, I'm going to miss this run. As much as I felt like it needed the fresh take, I'm going to miss it. Because when you no longer have it, you'll kind of remember what you liked. Or for those who hated it. They're, you know, right now running in their front yard without an underwear. You know, they're just freeballing it out there. So let's go from there, from Batman, so the end of a run, to the beginning of a run. And this is Tom Taylor.
Suicide Squad.
Bruno Redondo. Is this, like, the original Injustice?
I'm pretty sure this is the original Injustice creative team.
Yeah, because I was like, yeah, this felt very, very much like Tom Taylor, Bruno Redondo. I'm not sure if Adriana Lucas, that is on Colors and Letters by Wes Abbott, I'm not sure if they're part of the original team.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I knew Tom Taylor was mentioning that, and even the cover is kind of like, oh, half of this team that you see here won't be here. And he's going to be like, don't get too attached to, like, to the characters that you're seeing in this issue. And I was like, all right, let me see. I mean, I know Tom Taylor's going to do something, but again, this book is not like a deceased. It's not like an Elseworld kind of tale. So I'm like, how much damage is he really going to do? And I knew that this book was going to be nuts immediately when you're hearing, like, that army general that's, like, having a press conference, and then a teleporter comes, pretty much grabs him. Zooms them up to the sky, and now there is a new character, because we're literally being introduced to all these characters that Tom Taylor has been teasing throughout social media. And now, so we have Wink, we have now the Airy, and now they're trying to investigate and pretty much work with this general, but of course he's doing the same. We will not work with any terrorists. And when they drop him, that one panel of him landing on, like, the submarine, like the battle destroyer thing, and you see the blood, I felt like I was immediately reading, like, Ice Cream Man. Because, like, Martin Mazzaro, his art choices are very, like, graphic.
Yeah.
Like, something like this. So I was not expecting something like this in just a regular titled canon DC book. And yeah, and then you get introduced to the entire, this like, all the characters all at once.
Oh, yeah. And dude, you know, let me, like, just reading them off when I read this book for the first time, you know, you have,
Jog?
You have Jog, who was born in France. He's a speedster. He has short bursts of speed. So he can only run at super speed with 40-yard dashes. So it's just like... And then you have Thylacine? Or I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
Born in Australia. She is a hunter. So basically, I thought of... what's his name from Spider-Man?
Kraven?
Yeah, Kraven the Hunter. That's basically what I thought. And then you have the Deadly Six, which is basically a... You know, with this character, I don't think he was really used in this issue.
No, they showed him once when... I think it was when Magpie was hiding.
Okay.
And out of nowhere, you just see a creepy face with red eyes come from, like, the shadows.
Okay.
And then all you know is that she was dead.
He can use 6 deadly sins to influence
people. Yeah.
You see the Chaos Kitten, which I think is hilarious. I think the Chaos Kitten is basically Tom Taylor's X-23 or Honey Badger of the DC. Okay. I think that's what Chaos Kitten is going to be. From Hong Kong, she's a fighter.
I love, like, TNT.
Yes, TNT. Like, and his power explodes. Like, it's not, like small bursts or anything. It just says explodes. So
yeah, and we know already about Wink, who she's like a Nightcrawler.
Yeah,
we know about the Ari, who he flies,
and he can. And I love like and like birds. Apparently, I think that's what the power said. Yeah,
and then Osita, strong, angry leader of the revolutionaries. And then Osita, if you're going by Hispanic, I mean that's kind of like calling her like Little Bear.
Yeah,
but she's huge.
Yeah, which so, I thought was really really clever and really awesome.
Now I have to say, I actually. Again, now this is very much so Tom Taylor's way of getting you to like people and get into characters, but I actually kind of enjoyed all of these characters.
Oh, so did I.
Like
so
for the I. for the very, very small bursts that I got, I was like, oh, and we forgot about Scale and Finn, who are Atlantean and they're telepaths.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we forgot about them. But yeah, they're, you know, freedom fighters and they're pretty much just kind of fighting against
They're fighting against the the way I thought about it was basically, you know, the horrible plot line of Superman 4 Quest for Peace.
Yeah,
how Superman gets all of the nuclear weapons and all of the guns and everything, and he throws them into the sun. Well, this is basically on a very low scale of that. They're trying to steal weapons so that way bigger countries can't use them on smaller countries and you know, start wars and everything else. So they see themselves as heroes, but of course the U.S. government sees it as they're basically stealing, you know, government, you know, weapons. So they
are
invading this Navy base. They destroyed a submarine. And lo and behold, the Justice League can't come in, and some other heroes are just preoccupied at the moment. So the Suicide Squad is the only team that could help. And this Suicide Squad has, like you said before, Magpie, Deadshot, Shark, Zebra Man, Harley Quinn, and Cavalier. Now, and it does get a little meta because Deadshot even says, this is the worst Suicide Squad we have ever had assembled. And this new guy, this new government official, whoever his name is, I forgot who his name was. I believe Waller says his name.
I don't remember if they did say his name.
Gosh, I don't think so. Let's see here. I don't think they said
his name. Wow. Yeah, I don't. I have absolutely no idea what his name was, but I will say that I have to tell you, I completely forgot, and I don't know if these are because of choices of what's happened with, like, Bendis's run and what's been going on with Waller. I completely forgot that this was going to be a Suicide Squad without Amanda.
Yeah, so...
So when he put them in this huge mission that they're going to be going into this mission, and you got what you mentioned with, like, Deadshot, where he's like, this is literally the worst Suicide Squad that we've ever had. And this dude's like, well, we'll just add another year to your sentence. He's like, well, you can't do that. He straight up, like, tasers him. I gotta say, I love... I'm kind of sad, spoiler, to see Cavalier go.
Oh, dude, but he went in the best... Like, okay.
No, he died the best way.
When Cavalier... And like we said, we're skipping ahead a little bit. When Cavalier died... You know, a lot of people say they laugh at comics, they giggle, you know, they are having a smile on their face. I was at work, and I literally laughed out loud when I saw the panel of Cavalier's death. It was so out of nowhere, and it was so funny. But, you know, like you said, you know, this guy is a really big hard ass, and he's like, I'm not taking no for an answer, or I'm going to kill you. And all these different things. And Amanda Waller's just, like, brooding on the sidelines. She's just like, you have to do everything.
Like, are you sure about this? Like, I've known you for all this time, Waller, and you would never have somebody just kind of take over. But she's like, listen, these are your orders. Listen to what he's got. Like, she doesn't necessarily say it at first.
Yeah.
But, yeah, their mission is to go after these revolutionaries. And I got to say, the Suicide Squad, the way that they kind of, like, made their presence known, I mean, they were doing a really good job. Like, when seeing, crap, I'm already forgetting the two swimmers. Scale and, was it Finn?
Yeah.
Yeah, Finn and Scale, and seeing, Shark come, that's not King Shark, right?
Because I
get confused, because sometimes it's a great white, and sometimes he's a hammerhead.
See, I'm so confused as well, because it just says the Shark. It's not King Shark or anything else,
So I don't know if there's been, like, a storyline where he kind of removed King from his name.
Yeah.
But just for my sake purposes, I'm just going to say King Shark. And, I mean, his entrance and ripping Scale in half was nuts. The moment that, yeah, right after that's when you see Magpie, and then you see the deadly six.
No, that's
six.
That's the Hunter. That's the Hunter. That's not even...
Is it?
Yeah. I'm telling you, that...
Really?
That other character didn't have anything to do. You just see him in one panel here. On page 22, getting out of the submarine. You don't see him do anything else.
Oh, whoa. Nice. Okay. Man, I guess because, you know.
I will say, when you look at the characters that we have here, we have a total of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then on the other team, 1, 2... Oh, crap. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So we have 17 characters plus Amanda Waller and the new guy. So we have almost 20 characters that we're trying to keep up with in this one issue. So I can
see... And it was not hard to follow through.
Yeah, I can see why Tom probably didn't use one or two characters in this story, because he's probably going to wait for, you know, later issues to really use them. But...
Oh, absolutely.
At this point, like you said, Shark, King Shark, jumps in, has Scale in his mouth, and he's like, you know, Finn is like, please don't do anything to him. We share, like, a telepathic, you know, connection. He is my world. You can't do this to me. And King Shark just rips him in half with his teeth and his arms, and I'm just like, oh my god, this is so crazy. And we then see, like you said, Magpie is just like, I'm just a thief. This is way over my pay grade. I am not, like, I shouldn't be here. And boom, she's dead. And I was just thinking, I was like, holy crap, we just saw Magpie in the Batman run, like, maybe a month ago, and boom, she's dead, like, just like that. Just
and it was easy as right after that. Okay, we started getting some reinforcements, and that's when Harley comes down. That's when Cavalier comes, and Cavalier literally goes down there, says, "Hungard," gets punched in the face, and she's like, "You broke my nose." And if you're paying attention in the background, Osita is showing up, and she has, like, a steel arm. I believe it's her left arm, and she punches him from the back of the head, and this is something you only see. This is, like, worse than Negan hitting Glenn in the head with a baseball bat multiple times.
His entire head explodes.
explodes. And from there, Deadshot is now given orders. He's staying in the helicopter with a Zebra Man, and now he's just sniping every single one of these revolutionaries that have survived. And what they're doing now is that now they're kind of screwed.
Well, Deadshot wanted to kill him. Deadshot wanted to kill everybody, but the new guy was like, "No, you know, non-lethals only. Go ahead and just you know, shoot this into him." And he's like, "What are you talking about? They just killed half of our team." He's like, "You listen to me, or I'm gonna kill you." And so he does. You know, he shoots what you find out to be the bombs into their heads, and you know, this new guy comes down with Zebra Man, you know, protecting him with his force field or whatever. And Osita is like, "Hey, you can't do this to us. You know, we're the good guys. What are y'all doing?" And the guy's like, "Well, if you want to survive, you have to team up with me. You're going to be a part of the Suicide Squad." And that's when you see Amanda Waller explain that she quits. Deadshot and Harley are the only two remaining characters that we've really seen on the Suicide Squad, and they're just like, "What in the world is going on?" Like,
yeah, well, that's weird.
This is not how we roll, type of thing.
And then you get like the normal thing where people kind of always believe that you're bluffing when they say, "Well, we have implanted you with a bomb." In the movie, yeah, sure, you have. Slipknot is the one that got it.
Yeah.
I found it really funny that here, the one whose power is to blow up is the one that they chose to actually blow up and kill.
I love that. For me, the best part of this is the one, Osita is the one that is questioning it. She's like, "Oh, this isn't true, but whatever." And the guy's like, "Okay, fine. Let me show you." And he kills somebody else, not necessarily her, because he wants to prove it. He's like, "Fine, you know, this dude explodes. I'm pretty sure we most."
And she chose one that Osita, from the little bit that you saw, Osita was like, it looked like they were close.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they did have like a panel or two where they were having like conversations in regards to being proud and what they're doing is the right thing and stuff like that. So it kind of makes me feel like, okay, clearly you can see Osita is the leader. But it looks like, I don't know, you know, with their team and stuff like that, like, he could potentially be someone that was close to her. So seeing that and now mentioning and introducing them as the new Suicide Squad, I was like, all right, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I can get behind this
says,
book.
You know, he says, "Deadshot, you said it before. This was a lousy, you know, downgrade of a Suicide Squad. This here, this is an upgrade. And with this team, I can save the entire world."
Yeah.
So
we'll see. But I gotta say, I enjoyed it. It was a nice number one. Crazy, and if the book kinda has that tone to it, I'm down for it. Like, I dig it.
Oh yeah, no, I made the comment, you know, earlier in the weekend, you know, when I first read this book. I have never like actually followed a Suicide Squad book. This makes me want to follow a Suicide Squad book.
Absolutely.
For sure.
So Justice League, War, Justice Doom War, Scott Snyder, George Jimenez, Daniel Sampier, because he's also, he worked, him and Jimenez kind of worked in between in regards to some panels. You have Juan Alboran on inks, Alejandro Sanchez
on colors,
Tom Napolitano is on letters, and Francis Manupal is on covers. Dude, is this the last one with George Jimenez? I'm so confused.
No, the next issue is going to be the last. I just have to say, once again, Snyder and Jimenez continue to prove that they know who Superman is. I absolutely love this book. You know, this was basically the fight that Starman was speaking of at the, you know, beginning of this arc, you know, the prophecy that was going to come true. You know, each one of them were going to fight Lex Luthor and they were all going to lose. And to be completely honest, it looked like everybody, you know, was going to lose. You know, we saw Green Lantern and like crazy, you know, we get reminded that, you know, the Legion of Doom is actually in Perpetua's chair because Luthor gets every single one of John's constructs that he's ever built before. and throws it on top of him. And I'm pretty sure that's by memory of Sinestro, because we do see a small glimpse of him. And then we see the Flash, you know, running and fighting with Luther after that. And we get to see a little bit of highlights of everybody. You know, we see Wonder Woman take a big slash out of freaking Luther. And that was awesome. I love that.
We had Jaro.
But
Bruce with a freaking hey, I gotta ask you something. Are you surprised that like most of these superheroes, it seems, are left-handed?
They're punching with their left.
Well, I mean, because you would assume that if you're gonna do your hardest blow, you're not gonna use your jab hand.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So when you're seeing, which I gotta say, and this is I guess like I don't know if these are as anime as I'm thinking, but you know how Flash you mentioned that Jimenez. Okay. But you know how, like, Jimenez is a Flash of, like, anime and, like, Dragon Ball Z, and he's used inspiration. I gotta say that you can see a lot of those inspirations in a lot of these, like, I guess you could say in a lot of these panels where you're seeing really cool moments where, for example, I noticed it first with the hit by Batman, with the gut punch. I noticed it even more once Luther rips Jaro and kind of, like, slashes him a bit. I mean, it looks like he's hurt. I mean, if he's anything really like a starfish, I mean, he is going to be able to grow that back.
Yeah.
And he'll heal himself. So I'm not too worried about Jaro. But I felt those anime moments when right after he looks like he's going to, like, kill Batman. And then you get the haymakers
Superman
of all haymakers.
Freaking punched him into, six buildings. This is the picture that I posted online last night. Oh my.
No. This picture is just perfection.
Oh, it is. It is. No, it's not Justice League 25 perfection, but it is perfection.
Yeah, it's perfect. I mean, we can't show this to, like, movie critics, though, because this might, you know, trigger people like Man of Steel, because there's too many buildings here, you know? So we can't do that.
Oh,
but, dude,
man.
This was beautiful. And I kind of love that he's like, I've always wondered what it would feel like. This is Luther speaking, what it would feel like if you weren't holding back. And he's like, disappointing. And I was like,
dude,
oh, snap.
Dude, no, this, if anybody is a fan of Dragon Ball Z, this is almost a, you know, not complete, you know, side-by-side comparison. But if any of you guys remember the fight between Frieza and Vegeta on Namek when Vegeta thought he became Super Saiyan, and he's like, oh, is this the power of a Super Saiyan? How disappointing. This is basically what that is. It looks so good.
I can't
really
tell anything you just said.
It looks so good. I got so hyped when I saw this. And even...
I got hyped just because, yes, it's Luther, even though this is not like the Luther that I know now.
Yeah.
But just knowing like who it is, like seeing a battle like this within kind of like the Supers... Just the way that the art's being done,
this
was just glorious.
This is the fight that Luther always wanted, to be completely honest. You know, we can
for sure.
We can say that, you know, and you can, people can say that Luther is now a Martian Manhunter villain because of the way Snyder wrote him in this story and in this series, but he is always a villain of Superman. This is always what he wanted to do. He wanted to be able to go toe-to-toe with Superman. And now he has. And it paid off so well. I absolutely love it. I love the next page, you know, when you see them, like, you know, approaching each other. And
yeah, and you got the big hit.
Snyder has the voice of Superman as well. You know, because in the midst of all of this, he is still saying, you know, Luther, I like all of this. I understand that you may hate us. You may want to do this, that, and the other. But deep down inside, you know that you are human and we need to fight for justice and all this stuff. And them just going blow after blow.
Well, that kind of like that triggers Luther, because he's like, you know nothing. You're not one of us.
Yeah.
And you never will be one of us. We are meant to be predators. It's in our destiny. It's who we are. And he's like, maybe. But it's not who you want to be. And I was like, oh, snap.
Oh, dude, that right there. And he says it with a smile, too, which I was like, oh, my God, this is so
yeah,
because
when he said it with a smile, it was like he did that one thing where even that one Lex, when Lex, during the Year of the Villain, that, like, tie-in, when he's meeting all these other Lexes with the little boy, which, I mean, we'll see what happens with him. I have a feeling he's going to show up in the Crisis.
Probably.
But when you see that moment, it felt like even though he heard this message from different versions of himself, the one that I guess he needed to hear it from but wasn't expecting to was his greatest nemesis. So when he said that, that opened up that one little moment of vulnerability, which allowed John to kind of start getting into his mind. And that when I see something like this, sure, like, Bruce, like, did something to, like, jolt his hand, but it's just, it's kind of funny, like, when you're seeing the blows of two gods and then, like, a human with an electric glove.
Let's be completely honest here. Superman and Wonder Woman, their punches would have connected first, so Batman's just jumping in to jump in. He felt left out, so he's trying to reach it. He probably didn't even connect, to be completely
honest. Yeah, this is kind of like, my front and my left side of my face really hurt, but at least I can see with my right hand, but with my right eye. Like, that's, I mean, I get it that, you know, this is the Trinity, they should do the blows. It's just, it's kind of funny that I feel like just with the force of the punches from Wonder Woman, like, Batman should be, like, flying backwards just from the force.
And once again, I feel like we have to say this every single time she shows up. Perpetua is getting uglier and uglier every single time she is on a page.
Yeah, the more she's getting formed.
And it's nothing against the artist. I don't know who did this page in particular, because it doesn't necessarily...
No, this is Sam Peer.
Okay, so it's not his art. It's just the fact of just who she is as a character, and she looks absolutely terrifying. But
yeah.
I love this splash page. You know, she is basically saying, you know what, Lex, you have basically failed me. I have to do everything myself. And we get a point that I feel like should have given you a little bit more of the feels, but unfortunately, with the...
Well, I felt it.
See, for me...
If you're talking about Shane...
Yeah, I am going to be talking about Shane here. Now, don't get me wrong...
And I think I really felt it because I loved that one shot. I think, like, if you didn't like that one shot between... when Lex and John were speaking and they kind of and John was kind of telling him that story like if you just felt like whatever with that, but I've always felt to myself that that issue is going to be something really big.
I like that issue. I like that issue. My thing here though is the only thing that we've gotten from Shane up until this point was, mommy, daddy, please help. You know, like, mommy, daddy, you shouldn't be fighting. Mommy, daddy, blah, blah, blah. And so we haven't really gotten really character building with Shane. Mm-hmm. But this isn't the last. I don't think this is the last we've seen of Shane. So I think there's still a lot of time
to build
character.
No, it looks like he's just locked up in that little box. Yeah. But
I still think there's going to be plenty of time to build on his character. But it was very meaningful. He was willing to sacrifice himself to bring the one person that he knew the Justice League needed, that person being Martian Manhunter. And oh my god, the last page on this book looks so awesome.
Oh. No, it was crazy.
Like it but like, at this point, I know it's really silly, but I just imagine the scene in Aladdin where Genie comes out of the lamp. He's like, and he, what's that line? He says, all cosmic powers, itty bitty living space. That's basically what the Martian Manhunter's doing right now, because he looks like he is towering over Hawkgirl and Lex Luthor right now. He looks ginormous and it looks amazing.
Yeah, he looks glorious. And it. But I gotta say, I don't know why. I really did feel something for Shane. And it's not like Shane, I ever really had a big connection with him. But I was one of those that I was enjoying the Johns and Hawkgirl, like, their dynamic.
Yeah.
And knowing that this was kind of like, you know, this is kind of like, I mean, we're not going to talk about it, but seeing kind of like flash forward and seeing Wally seeing like his kids. But, you know, because of all this timeline stuff, you're like, well, are they his kids? Because that timeline didn't really exist. You know, like... everything kind of gets jumbled. It's one of those that when you've noticed that you've had a kid, mm-hmm. and like this is the kid from like another time or in the future, it's still like maybe it's like the parent in me where you kind of connect. So
well,
seeing...
And that was what Shane was saying. Oh, not Shane. Sorry. Starman was saying in the beginning of this yeah. arc when they were kind of, you know, connecting a bit, you know, he was saying, hey, the fact that you're here, the fact that you're an actual being that is physically here, you're important. You are somebody who is important. And that gave him purpose, you know? And I do enjoy those moments. I really like those moments. And I wish we got a little bit more of those moments, so that way when this happened, I would have felt it a little bit more. But I do understand the power of it. And, you know, especially, like I said, when you see that last page, you're just like, yes! The entire Justice League is finally back together. The band is back together, and they're about to beat some ass. This will be awesome.
Yeah, it was great, man. This was a beautiful issue. I can't wait to see what's next. And it's funny because, man, I hear so much commentary that people are just not – they feel so, like, hesitant against having Snyder be the guy doing Crisis because they feel like this whole run was a crisis.
I can see that where they see that. You know, but Snyder is just one of those guys that's always, like, every issue needs to be epic. And for a Justice League book, it's kind of hard not to be, because you have the biggest, most powerful characters in the DC universe all teamed up together. What else are you supposed to do? They're not like,
yeah.
Now I just thought about this and I thought it would be hilarious and I would actually buy the issue. You can't have them just like play baseball for one issue, you know?
Well, I mean, Guggenheim did that for X-Men for like, I think 6 issues straight.
Really?
So during like X-Men Red, X-Men Blue, I forgot which one he did. I think he was doing like Blue.
Oh my gosh.
Man, I think every issue they were doing like baseball. I'm like, how many times are we going to be reading baseball? Like watching baseball in an X-Men book.
That's awesome.
Anyways, Batman, Last Night on Earth, talking about Scott Snyder. Is this the end?
So, real quick, before I say anything, what did you think of this book? High-level thoughts.
It was okay. It wasn't, I mean, I felt like the Batman Last Night on Earth, like, I think it was great, was the first volume. The second volume I felt was okay, like, things are, I don't know, I don't want to say, like, they're falling apart, but it was more like, okay, like, it's okay, like, I kind of like them going into, like, no, I think that was still the first issue. When they met, yeah, Wonder Woman and going down to the deep depths.
Yeah, that was all issue one.
Yeah, that was... Honestly, I think, like, one was the highlight of this book, honestly. Everything else, me knowing that Omega with the final reveal, because I don't want to go panel by panel. This is too big of a book.
Yeah, this is a huge book, by the way, guys. Huge book. Like,
yeah, it's really large. It's
65 pages or so, so...
Yeah, so if you ever, I mean, even though it's kind of been teased in the beginning, I mean, this is, again, not the Bruce Wayne that we've always known. This is now because of Bruce with that chamber that he's created. This is just a new form, new, younger Bruce, blah, blah, just in case if you have forgotten. I mean, knowing at the end, like, yes, they're doing all their battle plans. You got all the team. This is the work that they're going to be doing. And finding out that, yes, this is a Batman that is, you know, dangerous. He's wiser. He knows what's going on. And to get to the confrontation to just find out that Omega is actually the Bruce Wayne that we know. Like, this is the Bruce Wayne. And it looks like, you know, and he admitted it himself that he broke like none other. And that's when he's kind of realized this. I felt nothing.
I am right there with you. Now, not to say that Snyder is a bad writer, because we just gave praise to that awesome issue of Justice League 38. Issue one of this story was a brand new world. It was like very interesting. It made me question whether any of this was real. Issue two built on that world. Issue three, I believe, fell flat. And
well, I mean, three, I felt very little did it connect, because the way that the book started to things, I felt like I had very little connecting points with what happened in issue one and issue two. Well, to me, the highlight of this, besides Capullo's art, is I love Joker Robin.
Yeah.
Joker Robin, I thought that that was a nice little stretch. I loved them with the suit.
Well, we see at the very beginning of this issue, and like you said, we're not going to go panel by panel because it's such a large story. But remember that one story that did connect them all was that story of that one the chalk line
yes.
thing that
yes.
Bruce was looking for. You found out that it was a child. That child was dead, but it was rigged to shoot Batman. Then he found out that that was Joe Chill's child, and then he went to Joe Chill's apartment, and then that whole thing happened that burnt down, blah, blah, blah. Now mm-hmm. he's talking to Gordon about the whole thing, and we are seeing that the reasoning behind all of that, Joe Chill and everything, and that kid had actually needed an operation. The operator, the surgeon, was a drunk Thomas Wayne that killed Joe Chill's child. And the death of the Waynes was not a random act of, hey, I want to, you know, I want these pearls and I want to kill Thomas Wayne. It was a act of actual murder, revenge murder, of saying, mm-hmm. hey, you killed my son, now I'm going to kill you. That, I was like, whoa. Like, that is insane.
That's insane, but I wonder, like, if that sticks. Because, again, I don't know what this is.
See, we know this as Snyder's last Batman book, quote-unquote.
But with it being Black Label, it's kind of one of those things that...
I genuinely think that you take the beginning of New 52, the ending of New 52, and then you place this book and all of the history that it's building upon, and you place it inside New 52, that is Snyder's story. That is what it is.
So this right here goes with, not to go ahead, but this is Earth 52.
Yes. Yes, this okay. is, this is Earth
52. I mean, okay, like, I can go... with that, it was, but like, also, one of those things that I just feel like no one's making a big deal about this.
I know. Nobody's really talking about it. And to be honest, you know, this whole thing with with Batman, our Bruce Wayne, the one that we know and love, he mm-hmm. turns evil. He has killed everybody. But one thing that I talked to you about on issue 2 that we learned of, like, the reasoning why Luthor killed Superman, and even in issue 1 when they were explaining how Omega became in power, Snyder basically took his idea of the Doom story of Justice League, and he wrote an alternate timeline inside of his Batman Snyderverse,
mm-hmm.
and Doom won, like, evil won. And it won so triumphantly that it got Batman. And, yep. you know, we even learn near the end where when our Bruce Wayne is killing Joker, basically, at the very end, like, near the very end, he is explaining to this new Batman, like, all of this stuff from the very beginning, even with, like, the Joe Chill and everything else, it was all calculated. This was all something that the Joker did because he always wanted a challenge. And so even...
like, well, that his entire... like, he's like, my entire existence is just to challenge you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you find out that all of that, like, from the reveal in the beginning to this reveal at the end, you're like, holy crap, it was a plan inside of a plan that's like, holy crap. You're like, my brain was melting at this point. Like, what is going on? Like I said, mm-hmm. Snyder is not a bad writer. I just don't think he executed the ending very well. So we...
I gotta say that, like, even... but with the final battles, I mean, I thought Capullo was killing it with all the action scenes.
Oh, yeah.
The action scenes were not...
Did you notice...
I loved how bloody it was getting in between, you know, when you're seeing Bruce fighting Bruce. I loved how I wasn't expecting that. And talk about a way to, like, activate the... is by using Bruce's blood will, like, activate... like Doomsday's eyes.
Yeah.
Like, that was... I was like, oh, man, are we getting, like, Omega beams? Like, what's happening here? But no, I mean, all of that stuff, I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed. I mean, I loved looking at the book. I just, I don't know, I didn't feel anything.
Yeah.
And it, and honestly, like, yes, I mean, you're getting like the little nice little crosshairs, like X marks the spot. You're trying to figure out what's going on here, kind of like with the ending. And I kind of liked the happy ending.
Oh, yeah.
But it felt like, whoa. Like, how did it jump from there? Like, okay, open your eyes, Bruce. Like, I want you to actually see, like, you've lost. And then from there, it just goes into, oh, look at this. We're X marks the spot. Let's just have conversations. Oh, my gosh. Look, there's, like, this weird eyeball-looking ship. Is this, like, a Brother Eye reference? Oh, no. It's an actual Kryptonian ship. Oh, look, baby Clark. Oh, well, it looks like Batman's going to be a dad and his... Joker is gonna be like, you know, Uncle Theo Joker and Diana. Like, I was like, okay, I mean, that picture looks like an awesome portrait. Like, I know that picture right there is gonna be when you go to conventions, it's be those big, like, printouts, like the maxi size things that Capullo usually charges like $100 for.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, I would probably get it because it's just really cool looking. And plus, I love the way Joker looks.
No, mainly. Dude, the way Kal-El looks, he's like, he is so freaking out. His eyes are like super huge. He's like, what is everybody doing?
I was actually expecting, I don't know why, but I was figuring that we were going to get like a baby Doomsday nod. Where, I don't know why I was expecting like a metal sign, like the horns up.
Nice.
I don't know why, but yeah, overall, I don't...
I will
like,
say,
the way that this was going... it's more like I'm kind of happy that it wrapped up.
Yeah, I am still going to purchase this book when it comes out in trade. You know, it's going to be well over 150 pages, I think, which is crazy to think about with all of these black labels, because most of these books are about 50, 60 pages, and there's three of them, so these books are going to be thick. But, you know, it is... something that I want in my collection, being stated as one of Capullo and Snyder's last Batman books, it's something you wanna get. So I'm definitely gonna buy it.
I'm gonna get it. I mean, I've purchased the singles, but just because I'm kind of in that more, I'm just buying singles of like stories that are like kind of like something that are nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I have fully embraced the trade life. Because for my own sanity, I've lived in a house where I've had 60 long boxes. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah, no.
Like, it's too much.
I can't do it.
I'd rather have the beautiful hardcover collection set and have it on my wall on my bookshelf and it looks beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Same.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. All right, so is Geoff Johns the GOAT?
Oh, dude. I wanted to cry.
Oh, no. This was reading this book. I had two emotions. The first emotion was, okay, we have the beginning of Doomsday Clock. Yes, we're going to Doomsday Clock. Geoff Johns, Gary Frank, Brad Anderson, just a Hall of Fame freaking creative team.
Yes.
And this is like the moment that we've all been waiting for since the time that we've seen Dr. Manhattan and him teasing this matchup that he's going to have this face off with Superman, that either Superman is going to kill him or he will end up destroying everything that we know. And we were waiting for this. I understand that you can't have a whole issue of just Superman and Dr. Manhattan, although I would have loved to, but, but it was kind of like this beginning part. It felt like Johns, maybe, I mean, with all these delays, who knows what the real story is of Doomsday? Who knows if this is how it was supposed to end? Well, maybe we'll know one day, but right now we don't know. But there were a lot of things that Geoff Johns needed to kind of wrap up quickly. And he kind of threw it all together at the start, in the beginning. From having, you know, like the Superman theory to all the wars to Superman being, you know... like an enemy of the country. And yes, you get the face off, but now you got all of these from the Russians to all these other international supers to Black Adam. They all come crashing to Superman all at once. And all you're getting is just absolute mayhem. Knowing that Superman is seeing this mystical figure, this blue mystical figure right in front of him, trying to figure out what that is, but now, no, he's just going balls to the wall, they're fighting, and that's what you're getting. You're going from there to Batman. Yes, you see Batman, and that's when you're getting Reggie. You're seeing Reggie again, and this is kind of like little by little, you're seeing his redemption from first kind of like he was a Rorschach to then finding out the truth between Walter Kovacs and his father to him kind of going nuts a little bit in prison to where he is now. You're getting like his redemption story. Besides that, you got Superman trying to figure out, dude, how am I doing this all on my own? Like Dr. Manhattan, and at no point is he helping Clark at all. And I was like, man, what's going to happen here? And but again, this book is going back and forth because it's trying to wrap everything up. I like how you get from good Lord, what's Bruce's Malone? Matches Malone.
Yeah.
From Matches, man, he went from Matches to Batman really quick. Like that's impressive. But again, I love that, you know, you have that moment where Bruce realizing that he was wrong. You know, he read the journal, he knows, like, you know, he's sorry. And this is kind of like where, yes, when Batman's getting to this point, you're getting all of these backup stories in the meantime. Now, I gotta say, I don't know, I want to know how you felt. Did you feel disappointed in regards to what we got with, like, Lex and Lois?
So that, you know, the biggest thing, like you said, is John's needed to tie up a lot of things in this book. And the narrative of this story, I feel like, probably stayed the same, but it had to be twisted for what DC was moving forward with because they didn't want to wait for John's. So, with what he had to do with Luther and Lois, it was a little disappointing because you know, at the very beginning, he was fixated on Wally, and then he brought up Dr. Manhattan. So those two were going to have a really good connection for this story. But because we had to wait so long, and because John's then needed to change his story a bit, I feel like you said, we probably will never know what that story is. Probably ever. You know, I hear on John's Word Balloon podcast that, you know, these guys are coming in freaking 30 to 40 years after they have been writing, and then they're finally able to say what they wanted to say, you know, when they were working at DC. So I don't know how long we will have to wait until we finally get to hear what the original story of Doomsday Clock was ever going to be. But I...
Release the John's cut?
Oh, dude, no? Yes, yes, yes! Let's do it! Oh, man.
Oh, man. See, like, you know, that's a hashtag I'm willing to start. I'm willing to die by that because I really want to know.
But, you know, the biggest thing that I feel like is the biggest talking point of this entire issue,
which is the most important part,
which really is the most important part of this issue, was, you know, Superman, you know, from Dr. Manhattan's point of view, with all of his omnipotence and everything else, Superman was about to kill him. You know, he closed his eyes, he stood up straight, he was willing to take it, he was going
to
get...
Well, that was before him mentioning to Clark. Because, yes, that's the classic where we have seen these teases of Superman with that haymaker, with the red eyes, which is absolutely glorious. Before that, because Clark was there after defeating pretty much everyone, he's like, how can you stand there and do nothing? And he's like, well, my world once had a chance at peace, and after I left it, it went to war, and it's still burning till this day.
Yeah.
But he's like, I see nothing but darkness, but I wanted you to know that I'm the one that's responsible for all the changes in your life, the loss of your mentors.
And he even said, I am the reason.
More specifically, I'm responsible for the death of your parents.
Yes. And I was, oh, dude, so hard.
He's like, I changed your life out of cold curiosity. So he's like, will you destroy me for it, or will I defend myself despite my sins? And I was like, and that's when you're getting this epic. And I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe what is this punch, like, what's the next panel going to do in terms of impact? I actually thought that this punch was going to be what changed everything.
Like, the collision of an immovable object and an unstoppable force, an immovable object, I feel like that would...
Yeah, I felt like it was just going to be where, like, Dr. Manhattan particles were just going to go everywhere. Honestly, that's what I thought it was going to be. Because, I mean...
That could have been it.
Because, I mean, you have people, like, you know, with, like, the Hulk, they call him, like, the world breaker.
Yeah.
Because he can literally, like, break down to the core and just destroy... Like, I'm thinking, I mean, Superman's stronger. So I'm figuring, like, if this dude just realized that this guy is the reason, but then the next panel does something where, in my mind, when I read it, I wasn't even disappointed. I was like, bro, this guy's so awesome. Like, dude, Superman's so awesome.
And once again...
I thought I was going to be upset because it wasn't epic, but it was in a completely different way.
Yes, it was epic in a completely different way. And I know that I was kind of pushing buttons in the Slack chat. I know I was. But I said, I finally get to read a real Superman story. And oh my gosh. Like, he says, you know, he says right here, I don't know.
I mean, hey, I'm not gonna argue. This is far superior. Like, I've this is gold standard.
Yes.
Like, I'm 100% with you. I won't go against,
you know,
it.
Freaking John, Dr. Manhattan, was like, why would you do this? Why would you defend me? And he says, I don't know what I think about all this. I genuinely don't. But what I do know is right now you have to make a choice. With all the power that you have, you talk about the destroying you, destroying me. You know, there is a third option. You know, and he brings up
the... Oh, I love that, because then he goes like, who is she?
Yeah.
I'm like, of course, there's a girl involved.
He brings up the picture and he says, you leave these pictures everywhere you walk. And it's Janie.
Janie.
Yeah.
Janie.
And he says, maybe the darkness you see, maybe it takes everything you have to save your world. And John is like, yes. Yeah, I understand now. It took Superman, the curiosity of Superman, like, this is how great Superman is, to the core of his being, somebody who basically forgot the meaning of life,
mm-hmm.
basically learned just by observation of just Superman that he can do better, like, for the entire universe, for the entire galaxy, for the entire metaverse that he calls it, for this DC universe.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is that when he says you have a choice and Dr. Manhattan says, I understand now, and he says everything ends, I thought he didn't get the point. I was like, dude. I thought it was one of those moments, like, where it's going to be like, okay, I understand, like, where you're coming from. But he never learned his lesson. I mean, it was like, I'm still going to... So when he says everything ends, I mean, I want to say that, you know, Tom King has mastered the panel by panels.
Dude.
No, Gary Frank is a boss.
Oh my gosh. What is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. The 13 panel first page, the completely blank second page, and then the 9 panel blank page. And then you see the destruction of Krypton on the next 9 panels.
Mm-hmm.
I was, oh my god!
And he's like,
that's
it
so
begins with
genius, dude.
And he's like, it begins with a child. The metaverse forms around the one and only son. I was like, oh god!
Now let me just tell you, Bendis, freaking get a notepad out and jot some notes. This is how you tell a story of Superman. This is how you retell the freaking origin of Superman that actually means something. This is amazing, and I love it. I absolutely love it. And some people might get confused as of why Superman is landing on Earth when there's apes on Earth, when there's just like cavemen, and then you see Ma and Pa Kent. This is him explaining. This is John's explaining that no matter what happens to the DC universe in our world, me and you reading these comics, that unfortunately, there's going to be mess-ups. There's going to be reboots. There is going to be all of these things. But it will
always start with Superman.
There will always be a Superman. And, dude, I'm getting emotional just thinking about this. That, like, oh, my God. Like, it...
No. It was amazing. And I felt like the way that John's wrote kind of like how he's explaining on how everything starts in regards to all these Rubens and everything. And he just starts mentioning, like, when I saw him talking to the Kents, and then I see the moment where we see, like, in the New 52 kind of thing, like, where how the Kents, like, died in the car with the car accident, and I saw Superboy, dude, that's when I immediately posted, like, that gif of, I mean, I don't know if anybody watches the TV show Brockmire, because that's, you got to be, like, a really big baseball fan.
Yeah.
But, like, that fist pump, I was like, oh, my God. That moment, I was like, oh, what? He's like, is that our son? And then, dude, I went, okay, you know what? I'm going to spoil it. Bro, I went nuts when I found out that the Kents are back.
Dude.
Like, F it. When the Kents came back, I probably soiled myself because of just how amazing of a moment that was.
Dude.
And I got to say, Geoff Johns, in the last 20 pages of Doomsday Clock, did a much better job explaining, in a sense, and I mean, I love this event, but the way that he explained, like, how this, you know, how this, the multiverse works, I was like, this guy just did what, like, Grant Morrison took, like, years to do with, like, Multiversity.
Yes. Yes. Like, yeah. I don't care, like, and people say it all the time, but it's true. Johns can fucking write on a napkin, and I would buy it.
Now, I have to ask you, though, just because, I mean, I know that this is, like, a trigger for you, but, I mean, yes, because I don't remember the timelines anymore with Doomsday. I mean, it all sounds weird, but how did you feel, like, when you were, like, seeing the Legion, but it was, like, Bendis's Legion?
See, this is me, like, I saw it was Bendis's Legion, and then it was at that point where I said, okay, he is working, unfortunately, with what DC has given him, but he's making a fucking amazing story with it.
No, he is. Like, he is.
I'm sorry, but just seeing the Justice League, I'm so emotional.
No, I got you. I mean, I was so happy to see Power Girl, knowing that we're getting, like, original, like, Earth 2 back. Like, oh, Earth 2. And then he's mentioning, like, yeah, Earth 2 is born. We're getting, I mean, yeah, now we're getting, like, Earth 1985. Oh, my gosh, would I love to know, like, if we're going to get some stories now coming out of, like, what happened, like, pre-Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Now, I will say, you know, Tom King has been teasing something with Watchmen. He's shown some things with the Button. I'm not sure if they're having him write, like, a separate one-shot story or whatever, or if he's planning on stuff for 5G. No clue. But this next page of, you know, we see the Legion, we see JSA, but at this point, we see Dr. Manhattan start to narrate the DC universe.
And he says, I see tomorrow, the man of tomorrow,
and for the first time, I am inspired. It is April 18th, 1938. He talks about Superman picking up the 1937 Ford over his head, and this is where the birth of the multiverse started. He talks about Earth 2, talks about Earth 1985, he talks about the Flashpoint, he talks about the Rebirth, he talks about Earth 52, like we were talking about in Batman, and right here, this is where things got a little complicated. I think people are going to have expectations, which can be dangerous, but stick with me. He says, in the year 2020, next year, Superman's timeline is bombarded by the reckless energies of the old gods once again.
I believe that's going to be the Crisis.
Yes. In 2025, a crisis unlike any other was seen, and they will call it the Time Masters.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, Time Masters is, I'm forgetting, what's the Fugadon? Is he a Time Master?
No, he is a, I don't know. I will have to go back on that. I will have to look into,
like,
that.
Like, Tempest. I'm forgetting. I know, like, he's a Fugonaut, but I didn't know if they were considered, like, the Time Master. Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, he talks about 2026. The timeline is restored, and Earth 5G is born. It is 2026. Superman goes on a quest to find Bruce Wayne's lost daughter, and she can, so she can save Bruce's son. Now, This is where things get complicated. We have heard that 5G is coming sometime between now of 2020, November, and 2021. This is saying 2026. I think that DC gave Johns the go-ahead to write whatever year that, you know, is, I guess, realistic, quote-unquote, so that way, no matter what happens, they can chop it up to, you know, something as far as a crisis as making the timeline squish. Or
yeah, this is kind of like where do you, when you're in a job interview and they ask you where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Yes,
I think this that this provides them plenty of time to
because
create the crises, to kind of fix things up again.
Exactly, because Johns goes all the way to year 2965. That's how far he goes. And I'm
okay with that, because I would love to know that, you know, if it's either through a black label or, you know, just like a prestige format kind of thing, where you could just tell stories like a Future's End, which is so far in the future, and that's like something that you can look forward to. I mean, we'll be dead by then.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I kind of like those kind of storytellings of like, man, what can possibly happen? It's a nice way to create like certain you know, certain characters and stuff like that. So I'm perfectly fine with that. The one that I'm really, from all of these that have been teased, the one that's gotten me the most is really that there's a time where that Superman will be fighting Thor, and there is a green behemoth that would actually sacrifice himself to save Superman, which kind of makes me think, whoa, we're getting Marvel versus DC. Are we getting a crossover? Is this, I mean, if you were reading like the comic book resources interview, I mean, he mentioned that, yes, right now he's finishing up Batman Earth 3. He's on the last issue right now of Three Jokers, which will be released this year. He just doesn't know when DC is going to like release it.
Yeah.
Because that's not up to him, but they're on the last issue of that story. After that, he says, I do have some stuff in the works. It's way too early to talk about it. I would love to know that we're getting a Marvel versus DC,
dude,
and Geoff Johns is one of those that are...
Now would be the perfect time, because let's just face it, as far as the big two... A lot of fans are freaking out because every single week everybody seems to think that it's the end of comics. And back in the 90s, back 80s and 90s, the one thing that saved these two companies were the amalgam issues.
Was pitting them up and pitting them against each other.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So from those moments there, we actually get to this showdown between John and Ozymandias, and you know, where he kind of felt like, oh, I always knew that this was going to end up happening.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of loved knowing that because, you know, you kind of wondered, where was the comedian in all of this? And of course, the comedian shows up, gets his revenge on Ozzy, shoots him. But his victory was very short-lived, because Luther zapped him back to where
he was taken.
So now he's back to falling out the window. And I was like, damn,
that
sucks for you, dude. And then you see the moment with, like, Ozzy, and then, hey, like, he sees Rorschach, and he's like, what, you got your revenge? He's like, I don't want revenge, I want justice. Bam, it's Reggie. Boom, you got that moment. So you started seeing, like, the closure within the Watchmen characters that they kind of, besides Manhattan, became second fiddle. You have Mime and Marinette. I mean, we always thought, the big theory was they're Joker's parents. But it finds out, no. What happened with the baby? What happened with the son? Well, it looks like John had plans for that boy. And holy crap. Well, even besides that, it was really nice to know that
they're staying in our universe. If you picked up on that, both Mime and Mariette are staying in our universe. So I think that they're going to be characters that people can play around with, whether it be in the Batman mm-hmm. universe, whether it be with Superman or whoever. So hopefully we get to see them a little bit more.
Oh, for sure. And I was happy to see that, like, Dr. Manhattan, because, I mean, we've been seeing the story of Carver Coleman, the actor, and, I mean, his life has been going everywhere, and it seemed like it was going bad. But even Dr. Manhattan, with the actions, from the actions of Superman, gave him even a happy ending. And that was, you know, that was nice to know. Then you got the moment where that just got me, which is where you're just seeing Lois and Clark. They're just walking Metropolis, and then you see Ma and Pa. That moment,
dude, that moment wrecked me.
And then this was where Dr. Manhattan knew, and he, you know, again, he's throwing a lot of dates out there, but this is kind of like the end of him, and he's like, whatever power he have left, not only was he giving it to the world and, you know, making it new, but he wanted to make sure, which he pretty much lets you know that he took Maimon Marinette's son and that he was going to raise his boy, and whatever he had left, he would give to him. And that's when you come upon the homes of, I mean, I know it's, oh God, I'm forgetting their names. Night Owl and what, Scarlet? I'm forgetting names here.
Oh my gosh, same here.
Silk Spectre. Yeah. There we go. I'm like, Scarlet? No, that's not her name. Anyways, well, they're going by, you know, like their alter egos, and it looks like there's a little boy that knocks on the door, and she's like, what's your name? And like, well, John calls me Clark. So it's kind of like now...
John gave his world a Superman.
John gave his world a Superman, and his name is Clark, and he's going to be getting raised by Silk Spectre and Night Owl. And I was like, oh, this is beautiful.
This is absolutely, I love this, amazing.
And then at the end, you see, like, Carver Coleman gets, like, his, you know, his star on, like, the...
Hollywood Boulevard, the street, yeah.
The Hollywood Boulevard. Loved it. I absolutely love this book. The beginning was kind of all over the place, but I get it. It was too much. But the way that the book ended, the last, like, 25 pages, it was such a great...
The potatoes of everything was just so perfect.
Yeah, the stuff that people actually cared about was done to perfection that... I don't know, man. This book was just freaking amazing.
So beautiful.
I loved it.
So beautiful.
So, yeah. Anyways, I don't have too much data left on my recorder to record our conversation. So we unfortunately have to wrap it up, because if not, we would just keep on talking about Doomsday Clock. But I would actually love to... Clay, we got to do something where we can talk more about implications on this book.
Oh, yeah.
Because
if we can do a whole episode on this, like, if you
yeah,
have
we,
time...
we might have to and go yeah. more in depth, because there's too much to this. But anyways, we're part of the Nerdy Legion podcast network, where you just go to nerdylegion.com, click on podcasts, check out all the podcasts that are there. Make sure that you click on ours. You could go to iTunes or podcasts, whatever. I don't know, all these other Pocket Casts, Google Play, wherever you find podcasts, you know, subscribe, and listen to our content. If you enjoy what we do, you could find me at Mark Reads Comics or at CB_Legion, where you could talk with either myself or Clay. And Clay, where can they find you?
Of course, you can find me at Fanboy Clay and at Fanboy Comics Pod. I always say with the new year, I'm always going to get that thing up and running, and I hope that I do. I have some people that I'm wanting to contact and get that back up and running. But yeah, with that, guys, we really enjoyed this book. Please let us know what you thought of the finale of Doomsday Clock. I know that I'm going to sit back and read all 12 issues again very, very soon. And I'm just gonna gush over this book, you know. A lot of people said that they wanted to wait, and I know a friend of mine that has not read a single issue until.
I know, like Rico. Rico ended on issue 8, where he was like, "No, the delays are just too much. I'll trade. Wait."
Yeah. So, and oh man, I can't wait for the trade of this thing. It's gonna be. I want the hardcover. I want the absolute. I want everything. Everything with this book.
Oh, you know, 100%.
Dude,
it's going
to be so great.
This is, it's going to be great. But one thing, I mean, this is going to be the last show of this year.
Yeah.
Of 2019. Unless, I mean, we might do something with Doomsday Clock again.
And throw it out
because I would love
Christmas,
to talk
yeah.
more. Or maybe we can just read all the 12 issues and kind of talk about the event as a whole.
Yeah, for sure, man.
And maybe there might be some nuggets. And maybe we could do that for next week. Possibly.
I'm totally down.
But with that being said, you know, happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas, happy holidays to everyone.
Yeah.
Hope that you guys have an awesome rest of your 2019, and we'll come back in 2020, unless we do something else, and, you know, with all new content, all the good stuff, and, you know, and we're looking forward to it.
For sure.
But with that being said, we will talk to you guys next week. See ya.